Without question, cord blood saves lives. And most people don't even know about saving cord blood, let alone why to do it and how it works. Does it change how the labor and delivery process works? Is there any risk to the baby or to the mother? Does it hurt? What kinds of diseases does a transplant treat? In these next 30 minutes, we're going to be getting answers to those questions and spending time with a person who is a big believer in the program because she gets to see the life-saving results when matches are made. And perhaps most exciting for me, we are also going to get to hear from two parents whose lives were changed forever because someone did indeed step up. You really won't want to miss a minute of this podcast. Hi, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we're going to get down to earth talking about moms, dads, babies, and saving lives. Get ready to be educated and inspired. I was so inspired just prepping for the show. It's totally on an emotional high level for me. But before we begin, I'd like to do what I always do. I want to thank the sponsor of this show, Tucson Medical Center. They are at the heart of so many important programs and have important and personal important and purposeful partners that help to address a myriad of health issues, and they also have cutting-edge solutions which benefit thousands of people in Southern Arizona. Since 1944, members of our community have counted on Tucson Medical Center to be there for them when they are at their most vulnerable, for us. TMC has been entrusted with this legacy, and they continue the tradition of providing the people of Southern Arizona exceptional health care with compassion and so much more every single day. We appreciate their support and the great work they do. And one more quick shout out from another MGW partner, Tucson Electric Power, and it's all about indoor air quality, which you know is one of my big things. Please take note. Don't block vents or ducts inside your home. Maintaining clean air paths allows your cooling and heating system to work efficiently. And to me, it's all about making sure you are breathing clean air and ensuring that your systems are working properly, which, by the way, will also help save you money. And who wants to do that? So please keep those vents clear. So now, everybody, take a deep breath and join me in welcoming Kristen Wilt. She's an RN and the cord blood coordinator for TMC's Women's and Children's Services, and Steve and Helen Edgington, who are parents. My thanks to all three of you for caring enough to spend the time with me to educate me and our listeners about this very important topic. And as I said at the top of the show, it's rare that we'll able to hear about an important program and why it's important, and then get to hear from people who actually benefited from it. That's really, really some of the things I'm the most excited about. Okay, so Steve and Helen, as I said, if it's okay with you, I'd like to start with Kristen so that she can demystify this whole thing and educate us about TMC's cord blood program. What is it? How does it work? Kristen, it's all about you now.
Okay, thank you.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to be here. So tell us what the cord blood program is and how does it work?
Well, basically, it's a program provided to Tucson Medical Center by the Arizona Department of Health Services. And it's free to moms that are delivering their babies at Tucson Medical Center. It's free for them to provide the donation. It doesn't cost any money. And it's very simple for them to participate.
They just say yes or no.
Yeah, exactly.
So when I was doing this, prepping for the show, I'm thinking about the process. Is there a proactive role that you and your team play to make them aware of it and talk to them about it? Or how does it work so they even know about it? And why didn't I know about it?
Well, the first cord blood transplant happened 30 years ago. So it depends if women had their babies.
That's right when I had my last child.
Yeah.
She's 30.
And so the very first one happened 30 years ago. So it wasn't like it was super popular and it was available to everybody 30 years ago. It's gained popularity since then. What we do is we at Tucson Medical Center, there's myself, and then we've got two cord blood consenters that our job is to approach women that are coming into the hospital to have their baby. Hopefully they've heard about it ahead of time. They are hopefully hearing from their provider, either their midwife that they're seeing or their obstetric provider, their doctor, what their options are with cord blood. Either to just throw it away, which is traditionally what's happened. They do have the option to pay money to have it stored and saved just for them.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
There is that option. Or there's this option to just to donate it, just sort of like donating blood to the Red Cross so that whoever is in need right now can have it. So it's that's what we do is go in and see if they're interested in the donation part of it.
So what kind of risks are there, if any? And of course, the burning question I want to ask is why would anyone say no? But we can get to that. I mean, I'm sure you have to assuage people's fears and educate them about how the use is. But it's an umbilical cord, which has no purpose once the baby's born.
Right.
But it can have a huge purpose. So are there risks?
No, there are zero risks.
I was trying to think about it. Like, it's out of you, so we're done here.
Right. It's actually collected after the baby's been born. Mom's holding baby, the cord's been clamped and cut, but the placenta still has not delivered.
Right, right.
There are other facilities where it's collected after the placenta's been delivered as well, and then it's collected. But at TMC, the way we do it is called an in utero collection. So we collect it from the umbilical cord after it's been clamped and cut from the baby, but the placenta is still in utero.
Got it.
So we're just draining the blood that's left over in the umbilical cord while we're waiting for the placenta to be delivered. So there's nothing happening at that point. So it doesn't change how anything happens with the delivery. It doesn't change anything that's going on with mom. There's no risk. We don't touch the baby at all. The baby has nothing to do with
it. The mothers probably aren't even aware what's going on.
No, they don't even really know what's going on. They're crying. They're holding their baby. Everyone in the room's taking pictures of the baby. They usually don't even know, that we're even doing it. Even though they've consented to do it and they know that it's going to happen, they don't remember that it's even happened.
So the choices are throw it in the garbage or commit to saving lives, potentially saving lives. And it's just, that's the point that I want everybody to have as a takeaway from the show. No risk, no exposure at all to the baby, the mother. Mm-hmm. It's just, to me, a no-brainer. But I'm sure, I don't want to disrespect anybody by saying that because people might have fears, but hopefully if they listen to this podcast, it will assuage those fears by education.
Yeah, education is the best way. If moms know about this ahead of time, and they know before they walk in the door, that's the best way, because then they can already make their decision and know, do they want to do this or not do this? And most of the time, like you said, they'll want to do it.
They want to do it. Yeah. I mean, it just, okay. Yeah. So let's talk about numbers. People love numbers.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of units have been donated in Arizona? Is it hundreds? Is it thousands? And what happens?
We've had probably close to about 7,000 donations through the Arizona Public Cord Blood Program.
Got it.
The ADHS program. We've had at least 600 or so banked to the National Registry. And we've had, I just heard this morning that we've had 51 matches. So we've just had our 51st match this week.
And so is that all done through the National Registry?
Yes.
And is that where someone would find out about where they live? Because I want to ask about that. And I said to you, my daughter's having a baby, my 30-year-old daughter, and she's very interested, and I don't know if it's available where she lives. Mm-hmm. So is there a way that people can find out if it's an option for them?
Yes, that's one of the places they can go. The National Marrow Donor Program's Be the Match Registry.
Okay.
BeTheMatch.com.
Okay.
Is a great resource about cord blood for patients who want to donate. How to find out what hospitals have a program, as well as if you're looking for a cord blood match, if you're looking for a cord blood unit because you need a transplant. It's also a great resource to find that, because that's where the registry is held. Also, the Save the Cord Foundation, that is our educational arm of the Arizona Public Cord Blood Program, and they've got a fantastic website where you can find out what hospitals have programs, as well as what there are public cord blood banks that have kit programs, where if you're not delivering at a hospital that has a program like ours, unfortunately, there aren't a lot of hospitals that have programs like TMC's. which it's unfortunate because it makes it so easy for the patient.
Yes. It's invisible.
Yeah.
After they say yes, it's
very
invisible.
Nice. Yeah. So like you're saying with your daughter, if the hospital where she's delivering doesn't have a program like this, she can still donate, but it's going to take more work on her part, on her end. So she can find out whether, and by going to the Be the Match Registry's website or the Save the Cord Foundation's website, she can find out whether or not the hospital has a program. And if not, then she can find a cord blood bank that will, that can send her a kit. And then she can go through the process with them, get sort of pre-approved over the phone, make sure that she's eligible, and then they can send her.
It's wonderful to know that. And I want to remind everybody out there that you don't have to write any of these websites down, because our wonderful show producer, Kelly, who does the show notes, she'll put links to all of these things once the show is aired. So you don't have to worry. I was starting to write it down, and I thought, no, you don't really have to, because Kelly will capture all that in the notes.
And something important also for those moms that want to donate that don't, that won't be delivering at a hospital that has a program like this.
That would be my daughter who's having her baby at home with a midwife.
They need to get set up with a cord blood bank, a public cord blood bank that will send them a kit no later than about the 32nd week. Because
there's timing.
It's not something that can be done last minute.
Okay. That's great to know.
There's stuff to do.
And my daughter's the type that will spread the word. I mean, there's so many people in her age that are having babies, and it's just, she got very excited when I told her about it. So it had a real impact for me. Speaking of impact, you mentioned that the first cord blood transplant was 30 years ago. What's happened since then? Like, the program's growing, but do you have stories or numbers about how much on a national scale, how many there have been? What are we looking at in terms of numbers?
I don't have numbers in my mind. I'm not great with numbers in my mind.
I'm with you there. So here's the good news. You gave me great numbers. So I can do this. I mean, 700,000 units have been donated with 40,000 transplants performed.
Worldwide?
And over 25,000 people cured worldwide. Yeah. So this is, you know, when you talk about these numbers, it's getting close to a million. 700,000. I make these big leaps.
Yeah, I do too.
And, you know, it's, you said it used to treat over 80 diseases, most commonly leukemia, lymphoma, sickle cell, and some metabolic and immune disorders, of which there seem to be many growing at the speed of sound. It's like, so there's been a real momentum. And I would think, I agree with you, it's more about education and awareness. As opposed to people being against it.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Now, what about the need?
There's a huge need.
There's a huge need. There's not enough for the people that need them.
Right, exactly. So these cord blood stem cells is what they are. They're used just like bone marrow.
Right, right.
For the listeners that don't understand that or appreciate that. They're a little different because they're immature. They're still adult stem cells. And some people get confused, and to go back to your question of why people say no, occasionally people are confused because they think, they hear baby, and they think embryonic, and they think, oh, okay, that's bad, embryonic stem cells. These are not embryonic stem cells.
Glad you made that distinction.
Very big difference. These are adult stem cells. They're just immature stem cells because they're coming from a baby versus an adult. So they're the same type of blood-forming stem cells that are found in bone marrow. So they're used just the same way. They are, one of the drawbacks is because we're collecting cord blood from an umbilical cord, we never know how much we're going to get. So it's different than when they're collecting bone marrow from an adult patient, where they can sort of just keep collecting enough until they get what they need.
Right.
With us, we're just draining this umbilical cord until it's empty, and we get what we get. Sometimes we only get 30 milliliters. If we're lucky, we get 200 milliliters, and that's what we would prefer. And that's what's hopefully going, that would have enough stem cells in it to work in a transplant. But we never know what we're going to get. More often, we don't get the 200 milliliters. More often, we're getting the smaller volume.
Why?
Just because they're little babies with little, you know, little umbilical cords, and they're just...
And that's how much there is.
And that's what's there, unfortunately. it's, and that's why that number of there's been 7,000 donations, but only 600 have been listed on the National Registry, because there's just not usually not enough stem cells in that bag of blood that we're collecting.
Got it.
But what's really cool about it that makes it different is that now that when it is once we collect it and we determine that there are enough stem cells in there to be used to treat a patient, it's cryopreserved and it's ready to go. So then when a patient is matched with it, they can have it immediately.
So it can stay around for a very long time because it's cryopreserved.
Right.
So it's not like it gets wasted.
And it's
in the bank.
It's in the bank and it's still used. And they still are doing, they're matching blood that's been cryopreserved over 20, 25 years ago.
Awesome.
And it's still working and it's still viable and they're still doing transplants with those units that have been cryopreserved for that long and it's still working. So that's fantastic. But so it's ready to go versus bone marrow donors. They sign up on the bone marrow registry, which is great when people do that. But then maybe they're matched with a patient 10 years later and they call up that bone marrow donor and say, hey, you were a match, but maybe now they're not healthy enough to donate. Maybe they're not willing to donate anymore. Maybe they can't logistically get those two people together to do the donation. There's just a lot of barriers to actually making that donation happen.
And it makes so much sense. Is there any difference in, I want to make sure that I ask this question, mm-hmm. between the difference between using cord blood and using bone marrow? Is there an advantage of using one over the other, or are they pretty much the same? Does that make sense?
I'm not a transplant doctor, so I know there are advantages and disadvantages to both when you really get down to it with transplants. Some of those advantages with cord blood are, like I was just saying, that it's in the bank and ready to go.
Yes.
There is an anti-leukemic effect with cord blood that I know that some of the transplant doctors prefer to use it over bone marrow, but I don't know enough about it to really give you that information.
There are some differences that, mm-hmm. that a transplant doctor would be able to explain.
There is, though, because they're stem cells that are coming from a newborn baby, they're immature. And so there's less graft versus host disease, which is a terrible disease that patients can get from a transplant, which is something I never knew until I started working in this field, that, yeah, we can, with a stem cell transplant, we may be able to cure your cancer, cure your leukemia, but we might give you this horrible disease by doing that. So with cord blood, there's a lot less of that, or it's a lot less severe. Or they might just have it for a year or two and then it goes away because these stem cells are so immature that your own body is able to
really
fight that off.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So it's really important to have that mm-hmm. bit of information
yeah.
out there.
Yeah.
What about you tell people in the hospitals? Okay, mm-hmm. so you have that captive audience. Mm-hmm. Is there an effort either nationally, locally, to promote this program? Like, I'm not kidding. I'm out there, and I'm like, I never heard of it. So is there an effort? I'm so happy to be doing this show because of that. But how do people learn about it that are not listening to Mrs. Green's World podcast or not actively involved in a hospital that do that? Is there more national effort, or is it fall in the purview of doctors?
Well, we're trying locally with our program, the Arizona Public Cord Blood Program, along with the Save the Cord Foundation. We're trying, at least locally within the state of Arizona, to do a lot of outreach. We do a lot of outreach. We focused a lot on the doctors and nurses within the state to try and get them to focus
right.
on their patients.
Right.
So we try to hit them up a lot at their conferences and continuing education.
It's a natural
right.
connection.
And then the Save the Cord Foundation has really focused a ton on the next generation. So they're doing a lot of education with students, with middle schoolers, high schoolers, college-aged awesome. Students, to try and get the word out there as well.
And that's very encouraging. Mm-hmm. That's very encouraging. Is there a, you know, I'm a very big social justice advocate mm-hmm. in every arena of my life. How does it shore up in terms of the availability of matches for Caucasians versus minorities? Is it proportionate? Is it, again, not a level playing field?
No, it's not level at all. So that's okay. another reason why the state decided to start this program was to try and get more donors from those underrepresented populations that are from our state to hopefully put that out, you know, to make stem cell transplants more available to those people.
That is a very, very progressive move on the part of the state of Arizona.
And part of that, I think, is because Caucasians it's easier to get a match, whether it be bone marrow or cord blood. But then each of the minority sectors, it's harder to find a match. Not only because there's less donors, but it's just harder to match. It's all matched genetically, and the genetic pool is so much larger. It's harder to find a match. And then mixed race is the hardest. It's hardest.
It makes sense. Biologically, right. It makes sense. Even for this non-scientist.
Right.
Like all those synapses connected. There's a conference coming up, and I mm-hmm. want to just thank Steve and Helen for your patience. I haven't forgotten about you, and I know you're there. So tell us about the Cord Blood Conference in April.
Okay, so did I put the date on there for you?
You did, April 4th, 2019.
You did great show prep. Okay, good. Because I cannot remember anything ever. This is the first Thursday in April. It's in Phoenix. It's the fourth
and
annual.
It's free.
Yes, it's the fourth annual Arizona Cord Blood Conference on the horizon. It's free to participate, to come. You can go to Eventbrite to sign up. We have world-renowned speakers coming to speak at it. There's breakfast provided, lunch provided.
So it's. I'm sure there'll be people listening that are excited about that. I mean, there's a part of me that wishes I could go. It's so cutting edge.
Yes, it's very cutting edge.
And life-saving. Uh-huh. So is there anything else? I mean, at any point, you can come back, chime back in. But should we move on to Steve and Helen,
sure,
please? I like it to be more conversational. But Steve and Helen, thank you for your patience. And as I said, I can't remember a time where we were so blessed to have a special program described and then people that actually benefited from it in such a big and significant way. So who wants to start? I'd like to meet Lila Edgington. So tell us about her story, please.
Okay, I'll pass this over to Helen. You can start.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you for having us, Gina. This is great. So Lila was born September 3rd, 2015. She was born a perfect, healthy baby in Scottsdale, Arizona. We live in Scottsdale. And she was great. There was no signs at birth that she had anything wrong with her. She was a happy, healthy baby. It was when we went to her pediatricians for normal checkups that she first noticed a heart murmur, and then I noticed a sharp curve in her spine that I luckily mentioned to her pediatrician. And it was about 7 months old that our pediatrician connected the dots that those two symptoms together could be a genetic disease. So she referred us to Phoenix Children's Hospital, their genetics team there. And they, you know, went ahead and did a lot of genetic testing. The doctor did have an idea of possibly what Lila could have. And it was about 2 weeks later that we finished all the genetic testing, and she had a disease called Hurler syndrome, or MPS type 1. And what it is it's a progressive genetic disease. So over the course of about 2 years, the patient can come mentally and physically disabled. It's, you know, life-threatening. You know, basically kids can live until about the age of 10. There are some other treatment options right now. Our world was torn apart, but luckily we had all good news. So I'll let us segue into the good news. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, this is where I come in for the good news.
I love how you two planned this. It's really, what a husband and wife team.
Yeah.
So after we found out of this disorder, the genetic department at Phoenix Children's Hospital took over. And the third thing, the search for a cord blood match started. We needed to go through an 8-week program of enzyme infusion for Lila, and that'll prep her for the transplant. While we were looking for the perfect match. Pretty quickly, actually, we found a perfect match, and the scheduled bone marrow transplant was for Minnesota in July. So as soon as the 8 weeks was up with the enzymes. Now, and going back to the perfect match is, so really, once we needed this cord blood, not any old cord blood will do. It does need to be a perfect match. So obviously, the more cord blood out there, the more chances for us to get the perfect match, which then results in a better outcome. So you don't have to compromise to get a less than perfect match will result in a less than perfect outcome. So Lila was very fortunate to find this 6 out of 6 cord blood. And then we went to Minnesota for the as a short treatment of chemotherapy. And that then, you know, destroyed all her blood cells, which would then allow the new cord blood cells to enter her body. And so we had the transplant. And from then, it's, yeah, more and more good news. So back over to Helen.
Okay. Keep talking.
Well, I have some questions, of course. So this is like you put this together in a wonderful, joyous, just the best possible outcome because she is now 3 and it's wonderful. But when in the middle of all this, what was going on for both of you in terms of what were your fears? Did you have any? What kind of questions were you asking? It's like, how do you help guide a parent to making this decision is basically what I'd love to know, because you made a positive decision and look at the outcome.
Yeah, so there was really, from my point of view, there was no decision to be made.
Got it.
You know, without the transplant, Lila's future was very, very bleak. As Helen says, with her progressive disorder, after 2 years old, you'll never go... mentally, you are stuck at 2, and physically is terrible outcomes as well, and they generally live to about 10. So, you know, but now we live in the transplant world. So, and there are risks. There's certain risks for any child going through transplants, but from Helen and I's point of view, there was no decision. It was, this is the only way that Lila could have a normal life. So,
yeah, and we were told that, you know, is cord blood or bone marrow person could be used. But for Lila's disease, Minnesota really preferred cord blood. It had been found to be more successful. And I believe this was alluded to before, that for certain diseases, it just works better. With the graft versus host disease, it was less likely with cord blood. And for us, the big thing was that it was readily available because Lila's disease was progressive. And by progressive, it was like every single month we were just waiting for her disease to hit her brain. And we did not know when that was going to happen, but we knew it would happen sometime within about 7 months of her being diagnosed. So if we had to wait for a bone marrow donor, that process could have taken 7 months, and the disease could have hit her brain, and it's completely irreversible once damage is done. What the cord blood transplant does is stops almost everything. So for us, it was all cord blood. You know, we were just hoping, and luckily we only had to wait about 2 weeks at the most for her match to come through.
Wow.
So as a parent, I mean... Yeah, as a parent, that's huge. Like, you can imagine. I mean, it was such a difficult time for us. But by this time, we were so optimistic, too, because the doctors did think there was a pretty good chance of there being a match. So it was scary, but we were very positive in the whole process. And with that said, Lila never got graft versus host disease. She had a few little complications during transplant, but nothing major, and she is free and clear now. I mean, it's amazing. She's it's She's done so well, and we're so happy with the outcome.
It is like the quintessence of the modern miracle of medicine, because this is just, I mean, everybody listening to this who has a child is feeling that, which you just described, that this newborn baby of yours was saved because of another newborn baby. Mm-hmm. Donating her umbilical cord, I don't know if it was a her, his, mm-hmm. without question.
It was a her.
It was a her. So there's like a guardian angel out there, truly, for
yes,
your Lila. And she's really great now. She's three.
Oh, she's 3 years old. She's at a fantastic preschool with her peers and has just come on leaps and bounds. So after her transplant, she was in isolation for 8 or 9 months just to wait for the immune system to build up. And then, yeah, if you should see her now, you would never know she's gone through a transplant. She's doing absolutely fantastic at school. She's got a great personality. And she really is the life and soul of any party that she goes to now.
And you better, I can't say you better. I'd like to request that you send me a picture of her, Gina@MrsGreensWorld.com, because that, I won't share it, but I want to see this little face, because I was very emotional preparing for the show, especially having a 30-year-old that's having a baby. It was so relevant. So the last question I have for both of you, and I'd love both of you to answer it, is what message do you want to share with parents who don't know anything about cord blood collection and public donation? What would you like to say to them as parents whose child life was saved because of that act?
Well, it's just, as I think you described earlier, it is a no-brainer for the parent. It's an absolute no-brainer. Once the umbilical cord has been cut, it mostly goes in the trash. But if you're at a facility or can donate it, then it is a complete no-brainer and it will save lives. And the more cord blood we have out there, the more chances for all these children that need it to have this perfect match. So it's an absolute no-brainer. And we want to, it's all about awareness. It's completely about awareness for the parents and as well as the doctors, nurses and gynecologists that should be aware as well and should be asking the parents and telling them about the benefits of donating.
Great.
Yeah, and I believe in the same. I'm so happy this podcast will be airing. I think it's going to be really helpful for parents. It really does come down to just awareness and education, especially me, you know, as a mom going through it. I was not educated. I was not made aware, and I wish I was, and I really make it a point now to tell my friends, just with my small group of friends and family, you know, everyone knows about this now. And so a podcast like this is great for it. And just, you know, my final thing I always say is, in creating one life, why not save another? And I really believe in it. It's amazing.
And we just all have to do our part to spread the word. Send the podcast to your friends. I think we should send it to the Cord Blood Association in Phoenix. I mean, it is about mm-hmm. education and awareness, as you both said. So the last word from Mrs. Green, as you well know, we are committed to raising awareness about every aspect of climate change imaginable. This is one of those shows that my observation is not directly related to climate change, but it is about community. It's about people caring enough to make the difference in the lives of others. In this case, a life-saving difference. And none of it would be possible without forward-thinking, innovative, and truly committed organizations like Tucson Medical Center. We wouldn't be doing this show without them. And we believe that spreading the word about important programs like the Cord Blood Program are an important part of our mission as well. I want to end by simply saying thank you to our guests, to our listeners, and to TMC for stepping up time and again to make a difference in the lives of thousands of people each and every day. I thank the three of you. It's the time flew for me, and it's like, what? I'm getting the 2-minute warning, but thank you for sharing this compelling, life-changing story, all of you. And taking the time, because it really matters. Hearing it from your mouth is so important. So, next MGW show, February 26th, Jacqueline Martinez Garcelle. She's the CEO of the Latino Community Foundation. She is a firecracker, and it's Unleashing the Power of Love and Philanthropy. Heard her speak a couple of months ago. Couldn't wait to get her on. And our next Down to Earth show is February 27th with Patrick Graham, State Director of the Nature Conservancy in Arizona, and he's part of our Celebrating Partners in Sustainability series we're doing with Tucson Electric Power, Going Green Award Spotlight Series Show 1. So Steve, Helen, Kristen, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you very much. And thank you on behalf of Lila as well.
Everybody, get out there and step up, learn about this, and spread the word. Thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.